the tables the other direction. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you again today, Barry, and we want the folks to understand that you sound like you're in an echo chamber because, as always, you're traveling.
I am on the road again. That's right. I feel like Willie Nelson in the song.
Yeah, that's right. Hotel rooms are not noted for their acoustic property.
No, they're not. No, I apologize for that.
Not a problem.
Well, anyhow, Charles, we've been talking this week about some of the, shall we say, after effects of the November 6th election. And one of the things that we talked about on yesterday's program was this whole concept that some folks in the Republican Party are coming up with, specifically Ohio Secretary of State John Huestich, but I've also heard it now from a number of other venues in the interim period, of how somehow the idea that having primaries where you have other candidates involved and not the party hierarchy's pick standing out there by himself is what hurts somebody from being able to compete and win the presidential election. Now, you know, Chuck, I have to take that on face value that I'm sure that people who backed a certain candidate would feel that, well, actually having to take positions and defend them against people who know something about these positions, it could hurt you if you're not fully committed to the position you said you're taking. It very well could be a very big embarrassment for people to be, shall we say, sounded out about where they truly stand on issues that they, well, for lack of a better term, or to coin the best term for it, they demagogue on. But, you know, oftentimes, as happens, Chuck, and this is what we were talking about yesterday, that immediately after the party pushes their standard bearer on everybody in the party and in the base, especially since we're talking about the Republican Party, that they expect everybody to stand up and salute the flag, as it were, and jump in and make the phone calls and do the knocking on the doors and calling their friends and going to the rallies and pumping for their guy. And when their guy doesn't win in the fall, usually what happens is it doesn't take very long for the recriminations to start. And honestly, it didn't take very long for recriminations to start setting in, where those same folks who the party counted on to go out and ring the phones and knock on the doors, which are, as we've known from many, many races in the past, by and large, in the main, socially conservative voters and socially conservative members of the Republican Party who actually do all the work. I know this personally from when I worked on the Ken Blackwell campaign in 2006, which was statewide elections, that you would go over to party headquarters to do phone banks, and the only people who were sending volunteers to the phone banks who were actually going and making the phone calls on a regular basis were the conservative candidates, like Ken Blackwell. His folks were going and doing the work, but all the rest of what you would consider the mainstream, the moderates, the liberal Republican candidates statewide who also had support bases, they weren't showing up. They weren't doing the work. So it seems to be a natural cycle that keeps repeating itself, that all of this stuff gets done, all this work gets done, and then immediately the establishment folks turn around, turn the table, and then start pointing the finger and blaming the conservatives for why their guy didn't win. We've seen this cycle after cycle. Well, you know what, Chuck? The table is getting turned in the other direction now. And,
and
it's about time.
Let's talk about that Blackwell campaign, because that was a perfect example of how the game is played. Barry, every time the Republican mainstream rhinos attempt to shove some candidate down the throat of the conservatives, John McCain, Bob Dole, Mitt Romney, we are told absolutely that we need to shut up, fall in line, and support the candidate.
That's usually what you hear.
Now,
what happened? Maybe not in such direct terms, but fairly much direct terms.
Barry, I've heard it put exactly
that way.
Yeah, shut up, get in line, support candidate. Well, the fact is that when it came time for them to shut up and get in line and support the truly conservative candidate in the person of Ken Blackwell, what did they do, Barry?
They headed to the hills, and some of them actually turned and formed groups supporting the Democrat.
That's right. A bunch of them formed groups and openly stated that they were abandoning the party and voting for Ted Strickland.
Now, of course, The vast majority of those people, I have news for you, Chuck, and for our listeners, are still active in the Republican Party.
Well, of course they are, Barry, and that's my entire point. These are the same people that just shoved Mitt Romney down the throats of Republican voters. I want people to understand, when I say ours, that's an old habit. I am a registered Republican, but I am an independent voter.
Yeah, as am I.
Yeah, that our thing is an old habit, and it refuses to die. The fact is, I really don't consider myself a Republican. I haven't for years, but I tend to still use that phraseology because it's convenient. But that being said, this is exactly what we're talking about. We are expected to do exactly what they refuse to do.
Well, and that's interesting, Chuck, because usually they are sitting behind the curtains, you know, manipulating the levers and trying to predetermine the outcome. And nobody has been found better at that kind of manipulation than George Bush's old standby, Karl Rove. Now, that's where the tables are getting turned, Chuck, because what's happening now is that after this election, many people, especially in the Tea Party and in some conservative circles, have finally woken up to the fact that, you know what, we just keep getting played. We keep getting played like a violin, and it's time we did something about it. Now, we saw this. We've known that this should have been coming for a long time, Chuck. You and I both would say that constantly. But the point is that now there are people who are picking up on this, and it's been picked up to the point that a organization like, and if you go to it, it's businessinsider.com, not where you would consider there to be a movement conservative kind of bastion here. This is more for business people, which you'd think would be more mainstream. But Business Insider ran in their politics section an article by Grace Weiler, says there's a brutal civil war in the GOP, and it looks like Karl Rove will be the first casualty. That basically the grassroots party folks and the conservative operatives in the movement, i.e. the Tea Party leaders, have finally started getting sick of having this happen again and again and again to them. That they're expected to go out and do all of this work for that candidate, and then as soon as that candidate comes up short because that candidate wasn't a strong candidate to start with or was very flawed, then all of a sudden they're the ones who are getting blamed for it all, as we saw when we talked about yesterday's program with John Houston, basically blaming the Tea Party and social conservative groups who took advantage of the Citizens United ruling in order to start funneling money and endorsement support to preferred candidates.
Well, what's interesting about this article, Barry, there is a section here, there's a paragraph, for social conservatives, the treason began long before Election Day when Rove led the party's tar and feathering of Missouri Senate candidate Todd Akin.
Yes.
And I remember this very well. After Akin's now infamous legitimate rape comments, and of course what he meant by that was forcible rape.
Right, and we explained that in a previous program. If folks want to go to our archive at principledpolicy.com, you can look that up, where we give you an explanation of what Todd Akin was actually trying to say.
Yeah, and the GOP's perceived portrayal of Akin confirmed what many grassroots conservative activists had long suspected, and this is in bold type, this is not emphasis added on our part, that the Republican establishment was willing to throw the base under the bus to serve the interests of deep-pocketed donors.
Well, and we also have talked about that on a previous program for those who want to go back on our archive at principledpolicy.com, where we talked about some of the deep pocket donors who were instrumental in Mitt Romney's nomination, in the pick of Paul Ryan for the VP's choice, and actually who helped pay for much of the Republican National Convention in order to have influence to push homosexual marriage.
And that was a nice little piece of investigative work that you did in putting that together. And people do need to go back and listen to that. It's, we don't have enough time to go into that here. But the fact is, we exposed that, I don't know, probably about 6 or 8 weeks before the election.
Mm-hmm. I think that was about right, yes. But the point is that now we're starting to see that many of our conservative friends and the grassroots leaders in the Tea Party movement are starting to see that they've been played, and that Karl Rove and the establishment of the party wanted to use them to get out the message, but the message was that they wanted their middle-of-the-road or leftist candidates to be the winners. Now, that didn't work so well for Rove because his PAC, what's called American Crossroads, and you may know it better by some of its television advertising, Crossroads GPS, spent $104 million in this cycle
and really got their heads handed to them, Chuck. They really didn't win many of the races that they set out to win. And what they did was, in races like Todd Akins, they created issues where none existed and very much could be pointed to as the reason why the Republican Party didn't take the United States Senate back.
Well, let's talk about what they wanted. They were very angry, first of all, that Richard Murdoch won in Indiana, beating out Richard Lugar, who basically had become a mouthpiece for anything globalist. Richard Lugar had become a United Nations apologist, in the sense was working very diligently to meld the United States into a, you know, I hate to sound paranoid, but a one world government with the UN as the leadership tool that they were going to use to do that. And if you don't believe that, all you have to do is look at his work on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I think he was the chair. And there wasn't a UN treaty that came down the road that he wasn't a major cheerleader for. And let me tell you, some of those treaties are awful. They are the surrender of American sovereignty. Now, the same thing can be said for Akin in Missouri. That Akin made a stupid statement that could have been repaired had the Republican National Committee and guys like Rove come out. But Rove is a globalist, and he is a neocon. And Akin and Murdoch both were setting themselves up to be the bad guys, to be the enemy to what Karl Rove's agenda was all about, Karl Rove and Crossroads GPS. And essentially, what they foresaw there was an obstacle to Mitt Romney's agenda, because Mitt Romney's agenda is liberal. They saw getting two more obstacles in the Senate to Mitt Romney's agenda, and foreseeing that they were going to win the election, and boy, were they wrong, and actually so were we, but so what? We're nobodies. What they did was essentially have now, let's put it this way, all the chips went in, and the payback was zero. They lost their chips.
Yeah, that's called the House wins.
Yes, the House won. And the fact is that Rove knew this going in, really could not foresee the idea that Obama was going to win again. And there was a lot of short-sightedness there. But remember, these guys don't think in terms that evangelicals think in. And Barry, this is one of the problems that we face.
This is.
And we're going to run out of time before we get through too much of this. But the fact is, evangelicals have too short a vision. Now, you and I both know the reason for this. We're not going to pound it too hard, but the fact is, if Jesus is coming back a week from Tuesday, then we have to fix the problems now. We don't have 100 years to fix it.
That seems to be quite some of the thinking or some of the philosophy. But really what it gets down to is, and Chuck, and this throws into one of my favorite pet peeves, is that when evangelicals or conservatives who haven't looked long-term decide to jump into this arena, especially and to put themselves forward as candidates, they want to run for the United States Senate, or they want to run for Congress as the first thing they've ever done in their life. I would say that, you know, we have to have a longer-term vision, because honestly, people like Karl Rove and all of the others, they've worked in local politics when they were in their teens, all the way up to where Karl Rove is now. He's run candidates at probably every level of the game, but he started local. We conservatives, and that includes, in this article in Business Insider, talked about a evangelical leader by the name of David Lane, who probably most people have never heard of, but who is very significant funder and director of much of what was happening among the social conservatives in this last election for Mitt Romney, trying to push people like our own Mike Huckabee, and I say that because most people recognize Mike Huckabee's name as an evangelical, to be Mitt Romney's VP pick. Now, obviously, David Lane didn't have as much pull as Paul Singer did, the New York multi-billionaire hedge fund manager who wants the GOP to support gay marriage, because he was the one who got his pick, which was Paul Ryan. But David Lane has basically said, Karl Rove's got to go. And so, but they're all looking at the 2016 cycle, Chuck. Again, they're putting their eyes on the big prize, Congress and the U.S. Senate. If many of these conservative / pro-life, pro-family groups, especially the C4s that John Houston doesn't like, who can now endorse and work for candidates under the Citizens United ruling, would start focusing here on local elections coming up. We've got city councils and township trustees and county commissioners and state legislative seats. You start focusing on those and you start getting people in place now, and you start supporting good candidates, raising money for them, getting their name out there by putting them in front of voters in their districts. That's how you win these races, so that you're not waiting until January of 2016 and saying, oh, what do we do? And, oh, well, who have we got left to go to?
And with that, we're out of time. And there's a couple things in that article I'd like to discuss a little further. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.